This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The Winnipeg Jets are proud to select from the U.S. Development Program, Jacob Trouba. The Winnipeg Jets are proud to select from the Western Hockey League, Prince Albert Raiders, Joshua Morrissey.
Winnipeg Jets General Manager Kevin Cheveldayoff making the Winnipeg Jets' last two first-round picks, Jacob Trouba 2 years ago, Joshua Morrissey last year. And as we continue with our NHL draft preview over the next month, we obviously hold special interest in what the Winnipeg Jets are going to do in Philadelphia at the end of the month. They hold the ninth overall pick in the first round. They do not have a second-round pick, as that was traded to Minnesota in the Devin Setoguchi trade. Minnesota then traded that to Buffalo, but who cares about that part? Third round pick, 69th overall. 2 fourth round picks, the second one coming from the Alexei Ponikarovsky pick, as we all remember fondly the Alexei Ponikarovsky era here in Winnipeg. And one pick in rounds 5, 6, and 7. We will talk about Luke Sutter, who was a 2012 second round pick, later on in the show. But the Jets, ninth overall, do you think they end up making that pick? Because there is, I mean, there's always chatter because we here in Winnipeg and we always like to, you know, look into the rumor mill and everything else. But I think if any year was going to be the year that the Jets make a trade, a very cautious organization, to put it mildly, and the ninth overall,
risk averse,
and the ninth overall pick falling just sort of outside of that upper echelon of talent in this first in this NHL draft, which we've said earlier in the program isn't fantastic. Do you think that the ninth overall pick ends up getting used by the Winnipeg Jets?
It's possible, Drew. I don't think they're going to move it with a player to move out. Like, I don't think they're going to move it with a smaller like a player in terms of value. Like, I think if they're trading that pick, the ninth pick, they're trading it with an Evander Kane for some kind of big package. I don't think they're just trading, you know, the ninth pick and some young prospect to move up to number four. That's not happening. No. So I think it's either going to be a package deal as part of a big deal or none at all. That's my opinion.
Yeah, and Richie, even though this draft might not be considered a quote-unquote strong draft, I don't know why I quote-unquoted that, but it's not considered a strong draft. They're not. It's still a draft where these top five picks are highly coveted. Even though,
just picturing Chris Farley, maybe I don't shower all the time.
Yeah, exactly. That's my idol right there. No, but even though, for example, the Islanders, Garth Snow has talked about moving that pick. As we know, Richie, the Islanders had a poor year this past year, didn't make the playoffs, but they have a lot of draft picks. They would probably consider moving it, especially if they're not able to sign Dan Boyle. They want to get a number one defenseman there. So if you're the New York Islanders,
sign Dan Boyle, they're still not going to have a number one defenseman.
Well, yeah, but you know what I'm talking about. They want to upgrade their defense, mm-hmm. right? So this is still a draft where teams will want something significant to trade down. So I think there's a good chance, and I don't have any inside knowledge, but I think there is. I do believe the Jets will make a trade this offseason. I've said that before on the show. And I do think that there is a good chance that if the Jets do make a trade, if it isn't player for player, it would be trying to move up. So you're talking about moving up to maybe the top, maybe not the first overall pick or the second overall pick, but maybe the third or fourth overall pick if they like a player. If they maybe have some inside knowledge that they really like a Leon Draisaitl. And again, we don't know that because the groups of scouts on each team have their own rankings. So when you look at Craig Button's list and you look at the central scouting list, we're going to have Craig Button on in about 5 minutes, but you look at these lists, the scouts have their own lists. Because as we know,
That's their job.
What I'm saying is a different list. Different list. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Maybe I should qualify that. But these scouts have guys ranked a lot higher. A guy like, let's throw Robbie Fabry out there, a guy that won the OHL playoff MVP for the Guelph Storm. He might be ranked 25th. Maybe the Jets have him ranked 5th on their list. Maybe they like him that much from what they've seen of the OHL playoffs that they're willing to trade up with the New York Islanders to get that 5th overall pick. It's a possibility, and I think it's even more of a possibility for the Jets because they're a team that is trying to get over that hump. The Jets are trying to get into the playoffs. They're trying to improve their team, and there's a lot of question marks. Are they going to bring a guy like Olli Jokinen back? Are they going to sign someone else? So there's all these question marks. So I think all of that points to the Jets will make a move either before the draft or at the draft.
They don't have a second, though. So that's, if you're going to move up two spots, usually you have to toss in a second or something like that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So they're not going to toss in their third. I don't think.
Well, they'd like to, but I don't think anybody's going to take it as enough to move up.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, they're leveraged there, and are they going to trade a second-round pick next year for something like that or a first-round pick next year? No. That's why I don't see them making any trades unless it's going to be a big trade for a Buffon or a Kane or a, that's probably the two guys you keep hearing on the block the more or less. I see it probably being Kane more than I see it being Buffon, but who knows? It could be both. Other guys for trade, I mean, which other guys are they? Are they going to look at some of their better players? I mean, you're looking at next guys you'd be talking about are Bogosian, Enstrom, Ladd. I don't think they're trading any of those guys. So maybe Pavlik if somebody will take him, but that's not going to get you a top pick. So these are the guys that they're in the conversations for moving, but I don't see them making, this team doesn't make any trades, and I don't see that changing really, unless it's some blockbuster, which would be out of the realm, you know, which would be out of the norm. But at the end of the day, you have to make a move at some point, you'd think. Now, they're going to do the draft and develop, which I've heard other teams do. It's weird, but, you know, draft their players and just kind of let it go. So if you're going to move up, guys, the question is a question I have is if you're going to move up in the draft, you're going to likely be moving up to pick a player that you think obviously is better, stating the obvious, the player is better than the guy available at 9. Therefore, you're likely losing, if you're including a National Hockey League player on that, you're likely losing at the NHL level some skill level or talent, whatever it may be. So if you're trading Evander Kane at a pick and you're getting a higher pick, you're likely getting a player who's less valuable than Evander Kane. And that is basically showing your fans, and I'm not saying this is the wrong thing, showing your fans next year might not be a great year for the playoffs. Might be 4 years out of the playoffs. So these are things you have to take into consideration because they keep saying we want to make the playoffs, we want to make the playoffs, but a move like that would obviously be not in line with as far as I'm concerned, wouldn't be in line with that statement. So there's many balls in the air here, and if you listen to Kevin Cheveldayoff, I don't know what the heck he's talking about at the time. I mean, I don't know what any of these things mean. He talks in three paragraphs, doesn't say anything, which is fine. Right? Just talk one sentence if you're not going to say anything. But so you can't get any idea. I mean, what was his line this week? Blockbuster trades are something we want to do, but then we pick up the phone and realize when we call the other team, they also want to make blockbuster trades and get the better part of the I don't know what that means, but the point is, at the end of the day, I mean, you're not going to be able to read into anything he says. Fine. It's not going to be like Brian Burke, oh, we might do this, or the Leafs, or whatever.
Yeah, Kevin Cheveldayoff's never going to be accused of tampering with another team.
He holds his cards close to his heart, right?
Yeah. To the vest or his heart? Vest. I guess it's the same thing. Yeah.
Well, what if he's not wearing a vest, though?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Claude Noel's not here. Dale Tallon is a guy who said he might, you know, look at doing trades. Tim Murray's a little bit more up front, but we're speculating at this point. I do, however, think Evander Kane is the one big chip, and it may involve a first round pick within this year's draft. But I'm on a rant here. But if you're going to be treating a guy of the quality of Evander Kane, wouldn't you want it to involve a first round pick next year
in a better draft? You're saying? Yep. We'll find out 20 days from today when the NHL draft gets underway in Philadelphia. We'll be there and we'll bring you all the latest news you need to know here on TSN 1290 and on LegalCurve.com. When we come back, we continue with our draft coverage. Craig Button is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show TSN's draft expert, Craig Button. Craig, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks.
Craig obviously brought you on to talk about the NHL draft, and we've been talking about it throughout the show so far, and it seems like it's not the strongest draft that we've seen in the last number of years, but there is sort of a pretty clear-cut top three with Sam Reinhart, Aaron Ekblad, and Sam Bennett. You know, which of those three, you've ranked Sam Reinhart as the number one, as your number one guy on your Craigslist, your most recent one earlier this week. Do you expect that it's going to be Sam Reinhart if and when the Florida Panthers make that first pick at the end of the month?
No, I don't. I think that you can't go wrong with, I don't think you can go wrong with any one of those three guys. So I think depending on what a team is looking for, a certain style, specific type of personality, that any one of those three guys could go in the first hole. But I think that you could even put Draisaitl in there as a guy potentially that wouldn't surprise me if he went first overall.
Craig, you mentioned Leon Draisaitl, who plays for Prince Albert, of course coached by Dave Manson, their former Winnipeg Jet. What's Draisaitl's greatest quality, and how does he project as a future NHLer?
Well, I would say there's two great qualities he has. He has outstanding vision and awareness on the ice, and he's got great passing skills, and he can make all manner of pass in situations. And I think that those types of players that can see the play, that can understand what's unfolding in front of them, that can take advantage of what's unfolding in front of them, that's where the skill comes in. A lot of players can see it. A lot of players can't take advantage. Certainly Leon can.
Craig, you know,
I think he projects as a clear-cut top two centerman in the National Hockey League. And like all players, you got to progress. You got to get better. He could very easily in time be a number one center. I don't have any question about that.
Craig, you hear from a lot of people that this draft kind of drops off after about 7 or 8. Do you subscribe to that theory?
I never do. Every draft has its own personality. Every draft is, I think, too much of the draft is defined by the top end. So does this draft have a superstar? I mean, not an identifiable one right now. But if you look back over the course of time and you see drafts and you understand the players develop at different rates and come out of different parts of the draft, I think that's what you're going to see in this draft. You know, I hear it all the time, oh, it's not a great draft. I didn't have a problem getting to 100 players. I had a problem getting down to 100 players. Mm. So that tells me that this is a pretty good draft. Now, it might not have as, like I said, as many identifiable players, as more kind of, I guess what I would call rough finishing still in place, and there's got to be some, you know, like a finish carpenter's got to come in and do some of the work. But that being said, I think that time will show that this draft will produce some very good hockey players.
Craig, a lot of talk about Sam Bennett, obviously plays for Kingston in the OHL, wasn't able to do a pull-up at the NHL scouting at the draft combine or whatever. Do you put any stock into that whatsoever, and would that affect your ranking on Sam Bennett at all?
Not at all, and it didn't, as you guys saw. Mm-hmm. It's not going to change my view of Sam Bennett. You got to keep in mind, It's a benchmarking process. And I think when you're looking at a benchmarking process, it's an opportunity for teams to see where a player is at. It's an opportunity for players to know where they're at. And I think those are incredibly important exercises. And, you know, in today's world, you know, it's surprising that Sam couldn't do a pull-up. But at the same time, he dealt with a groin injury. He'd been off the ice for a while, resting it and rehabbing it. He also had some bad shoulders. So how much he put into it, how much he didn't, I can't answer that, but I can answer you this. He's a darn good player, and I don't think that hurts him in any way, shape, or form with respect to projection.
Yeah, Craig, I can't do pull-ups either, and I'm able to do the radio show every week. So the next
testimony to your spirit and your will and your determination.
We want to talk to you about who you have ranked number 9. Of course, as you know, the Winnipeg Jets have the 9th overall pick in the upcoming draft. William Nylander, who has played with his dad, remember Michael Nylander played in the NHL for many years. He played for Modo. Do you think William Nylander is going to be there at number 9, first of all? And because I haven't seen him play that much, I know he was good in the Ivan Hlinka tournament, getting 6 points in the Ivan Hlinka tournament. But what kind of player is he? Is he similar to his dad in his style of play?
You know, his dad was a playmaker. His dad was a guy who could slow down the play. He was very elusive. I don't think that his dad was as good a skater as William. William is an outstanding skater. He's got the, in every manner of speaking, when I talk about an outstanding skater, speed, quickness, agility, mobility, darting ability, all those things that make him so elusive. I think that William is lethal shooting. I think he's lethal as a playmaker. So that makes him a very, very dangerous player to try to check and try to keep in check. So I'll be straightforward with you. I'll be surprised if he's there at 9.
Interesting. You have Travis Sanheim, Craig, at 8, and he shot up from 32 in your last rankings. What prompted such a significant rise up the board?
Well, as you continue to watch a player over time, and you got to keep in mind, and I always do, is that you're evaluating over time, and it's not about going and catching a player play good or trying to say he didn't play good or while he had an outstanding tournament. Travis is a guy who played midget hockey last year, and as you watched him, you just kept watching, and you kept seeing this potential and this ability. And as time went on, and then you start to measure him versus his peers, and really going to the U18 tournament and watching how he played at that tournament against some of the very best players in this draft, I mean, it just solidified it for me. I'm not saying he's that player today, but I'm going to tell you at the same stage of the game, going into his draft year, he reminds me a lot of Ryan McDonough.
Interesting.
Craig, we know that you have to get running, and we appreciate you giving us your time. One final question for you. In your most recent lottery mock draft, you have Brendan Perlini going 9th overall to the Winnipeg Jets. In your most recent Craigslist, you have him 11th overall. He certainly got the size, 6'3", 205, plays left wing for Niagara in the OHL. You know, what can you tell our audience about Brendan Perlini, and do you expect that he would be there in and around the 9th spot where the Jets would allegedly pick?
Yeah, I think he'll be around. I think there's a good chance he'll be there. Here's the thing with Brendan. He's an excellent skater. He's got size. He's got an excellent shot. He's one of those guys that can score from 40 feet. He can score with a shot. He can score by powering around people and blowing past people with the skating that he has. I think that Brendan might be one of the most raw players in the draft. And, you know, despite putting up some really good offensive numbers this year in the OHL, I think his untapped potential is tremendous. And I think you could be looking at a player in 3-4 years' time that you just go, wow, what an impact he can have on the game. Because, I mean, where do you find 6'3" guys that can skate and shoot and deliver offense? I mean, goal scoring is a big part of the game. And Brendan, to me, has all those attributes and all those skills to be a very good one.
Craig Button is the TSN draft expert. You'll hear much more from him as the draft ramps up towards the end of the month. And, of course, he'll be in Philadelphia on the TSN broadcast. Craig, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great day.
You too, Craig. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Craig.
Let's head to break. We'll talk much more about the draft as the weeks get closer to the time in Philadelphia. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
You know, I got to say one thing. Big thanks to Craig Button for coming on. He comes on every year to help us kick off our NHL draft preview coverage. More knowledgeable than anyone you'll ever find and just amazing, nice guy. Always helps us out. An interesting point about his dad, Jack Button. He created the NHL Central Scouting Bureau. Some people don't know that. A lot of people in obviously the hockey world do. So he's got it in his blood, the scouting.
That's awesome.
You know, big thanks to him for coming on.
Well, I agreed wholeheartedly. In case you missed any of that, it will be available, of course, for download on iTunes, on illegalcurve.com, and on tsn1290.ca. Going to spend this segment talking about the news surrounding the return of the World Cup of Hockey. But first, we want to play this.
It's Deadmarsh. Big drive. He's gone! To 2 lead with 17 and a half to go, and they're going to win this World Cup.
This is no miracle. It is a reward for building excellence, and Mike Richter should be the guy that will sit atop all of it. The final score, Team USA 5, Canada 2. Team USA has won the World Cup.
Now, part of the reason for wanting to play that clip in particular is to see if I can make Richard's head blow off his shoulders in the course of the show. And I'm sure you still have vivid memories of that 1996 World Cup, don't you there, Mr. Pollock?
I think Richard's going to lay one out on Drew here after playing that clip.
Well, you know, it's a little bit more interesting than the 2004 version where they beat Finland in the championship game. And in terms of the history, if you want the World Cup to be a historical event, which one do you remember more? Do you remember 96?
So we should have every other team win just because it's fun?
No, we shouldn't. But I mean, which one if you ask people what's your memories of the World Cup of Hockey? You know, not the Canada Cup, but the World Cup of Hockey, I think most Canadian hockey fans would say they remember 96 and falling at the hands of the Americans.
Not 2004.
Not 2004 when they steamrolled through the tournament and beat the Finns in the final.
I think you're right about, I can't believe you haven't even mentioned it yet, that the trophy. Remember that hideous trophy from the 2004 World Cup? Remember that? Do you remember that?
It's an ugly trophy.
Maybe we can tweet that out, Drew, on our Twitters. Remus, if Remus was here, we'd get Remus to do it. But I think Remus is sleeping right now. But no, I think it really was 96, and that's unfortunate. But on the other end, it wasn't unfortunate because it was big for American hockey. I'm Canadian, and I'm always cheering for Canada at the Olympics or the World Championships. But it was big, but I think more so it was how the game unfolded. And Richie could go over goal by goal in that game, but starting off with the Brett Hull high stick goal, which I believe was a high stick.
The Amante kick-in, too?
The Amante kick-in and all that. So, I mean, the Americans won, unfortunately, under circumstances that were questionable. But they still won, and it was big for American hockey back then. You know, the team that they had back then, Roenick and Chelios and Richter and all those great American players, Leach. But getting back to the announcement that the World Cup of Hockey is going to take place in 2016, I'm of the mind, I'm optimistic about the future of the World Cup of Hockey, and I think it has the ability. And I'm not saying in 2004 it wasn't a good tournament, Bertie, as you mentioned, because you were there. It was Montreal, you were there, right?
I did go to two games, yeah.
You were at two games. The timing of that, it was before the season started. It was after the 2002 Olympics. As you mentioned, Canada kind of steamrolled all over the competition. It was in between two Olympic years, and we knew that it wasn't going to happen every 4 years. I'm of the mindset that if the NHL and the NHLPA and the IIHF, everybody's on board, they can have a great tournament that happens every 4 years. And I don't want to hear that it's going to compete with the World Cup of Soccer. It's not the World Cup of Soccer. But I think if they do this right, and there's no reason to believe why they can't do this right with 2 years to plan this out, I think you can have a World Cup of Hockey. And I believe, by the way, that it shouldn't just take place in Canada or North America. I think the World Cup of Hockey should also be in other countries. But I think that everyone
should... It
has
been in the past.
Well, if in
the whole thing, right?
Well, in 04, I believe it was the preliminary... There were preliminary round games in Europe, and then there were preliminary round games in North America, and then all the quality, you know, the gold medal and the playoff rounds were all held in North America.
Yeah. Right. I'm saying I think it should be in one city, host country, host city.
Which is what they're talking about, it all being in Toronto coming up in 2016.
Yeah. But I am in favor...
We're better than Toronto.
I'm in favor of this.
They have no brains, do they?
I think the Olympic participation, I'm of the belief that because of South Korea and what's going on with how of a nightmare that's going to be, I think that this should be permanent. Every 4 years, there's a World Cup of hockey. I'm of the mindset.
They can have both. I mean, they have Euro Cup and World Cup in soccer. Both have a lot of significance, do they not?
Sure.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, Euro, you're right. The European Soccer Championships, Euro Cup is huge.
Well, in Europe, it's almost bigger than the World Cup. If you win the Euro, mm-hmm. it's almost bigger than that because of how much harder it is to win and all that, right? Winning the World Cup. But I guess you can do both, but there's just the uncertainty because, as you know, Richie, Sochi, they didn't commit to going to Sochi until, 3 months before Sochi?
Well, it's all about money control, but let's talk about the thing that I think is most important here. Creating series.
Yep.
Creating a series to see who the best team is, not the one-game elimination. Nope. Give me a best of five or, at minimum, a best of three. If you go back to the best Canada Cups or the best Canada Cup, 87.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Summit Series, you want to talk about that as a Canada Cup, essentially.
Even 91 was good.
72. You talk about a best of three. You get to see the best players play each other not one time, and hopefully three times.
And because that is, you know, 3, 6, 5 games or 8, whatever it may be, I want to see the best players play each other more than once. You know, the Olympics to me is an overrated tournament.
Yep.
Because you look at the, you go over there, you play 3 meaningless games, you play a qualifying matchup, you play 2 games. You play 2 games, you're the best team. And that's great, and I think Canada was the best team. But my point is, I want to see all these teams play each other, and then I want to see a series of the best teams against each other. I want to see the best hockey, night in, night out. And if you're in the same city, you should be able to play on back-to-back nights, no travel. I think there's a way to make this tournament terrific.
Yep.
Let's just see if the NHL can get out of its own way.
And the World Cup of Hockey, should be a mini Stanley Cup playoffs. You should have round robin games that mean something and mean something in the sense that it gives you the seeding. And then have a best of 3 semifinal, have a best of 5
that'd
final.
That'd be amazing, wouldn't
and
it?
Do it like that. And then Canada, Russia, Finland, USA, Sweden, Czech Republic, all these countries have a chance to get to the semifinal round, and then once they, if they get through to the finals, then you start to see a really good series. You see these teams a lot more often. I agree with Rich. Even though Canada winning the Olympics is a big deal, and we're very proud of that.
It's a 2-game tournament.
I think exactly. I think once you know, Canada you know plays Norway and France and all these countries.
4 years,
those
for
games,
2 games
mean nothing. Those games are practices. That's what they are.
Practices.
No offense to these countries, but I mean, these are the best players in the world. You want to see Canada versus the U.S. I think that's what everybody expects it to be, or maybe Sweden, maybe Russia.
You do a training camp, okay? Yep. You can do the exhibition during the same time if you want, because nobody cares about the exhibition anyways. You do a training camp.
Sure.
Okay? You start September 1 for the teams. Training camp goes until September 8, okay? NHL season starts October 1. So you're looking at September 8 to October 1. That's the 3 weeks, okay? You do a week tournament.
Round robin, you mean?
Yep. Round robin. You play 4 games in 8 days, okay?
Yeah. Should be 6 teams, right? Or 8 teams? 6?
I would do 8 teams. That's fine.
8?
So 4 games in 8 days, right? And then you have 2 weeks to do the playoffs. You do a best of 3 in the semis or whatever. You play 1 game for quarters, and then a best of 3 for the semis. So if you want to give them every other day, that's say 6-7 days, and then you can play a best of 5 over the next 8-9 days. You can figure it out. You can stretch it out. But the point is, that would be great hockey. That would be incredible if you could do it that
the
way.
The NHL season would be a letdown afterwards.
Yeah. That's fine.
We
have to mention, too, Richie, that they haven't come out and said there would be best of 3 semis, best of 5.
No, that's what I'm saying.
It's possible that it is just best of 3 finals.
I think they've already come out and put the tournament, if it is in Toronto, they put it in the worst possible city they could put it into.
They just want all the attention centered.
Like, are you talking about for the tournament, or just you don't like Toronto?
I think
even though you're wearing a Blue Jays jersey.
I have nothing wrong with... I mean, I think... Toronto will be good for the Canadian games, or I mean, it'll outprice any actual fans, and it'll all
That's
just be
true.
Corporate.
That's true.
But all the other games, besides games involving Canada, I don't think will draw any attendance. Really, they'll draw a relatively minor attendance. I don't think it'll be terrific.
They'll sell them as a package, though.
Yeah, they'll figure it out.
It's going to be corporate. They're going to be selling all the tickets.
Yeah, so there won't be any real fans there. It won't be a raucous atmosphere like we saw in Hamilton in '87. Which
nice if Winnipeg got a game.
Well, I mean, it would be nice if they spread out the love a little bit.
If it's going to be in a country, you don't have to have it in one city.
Sure.
Granted, I mean, they could probably play them all in that area if they wanted to.
1972, Drew, who won between Canada and the Soviet Union?
The Summit Series?
Yeah.
Like the entire tournament?
No, the game that was in Winnipeg.
It was a tie.
That's right.
I know. That's why there was a game 9. Yeah,
you know your history.
Well, game 8. That's why there was a game 8.
Yeah. No, that's not why. I think there's always going to be 8 games. That's why there
was always
winner.
8 games.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so
you were like 13. I don't know. I can't believe you don't remember that. But no, Drew, that's what I think you need to do. You need to be able to make this something. You need to distinguish this from the Olympics. Not just make it a money-making endeavor for the NHL.
Well, that's all it is for the NHL, though.
Can make the game better. You can make it appealing. And I think it should move countries every 4 years. I completely agree with that. Canada 1 year, the States the next time. Sweden and Finland and Russia. It'd be great.
It's for the fans. It's for the players first and foremost. Okay, yes. Let's live in a world where money doesn't exist and everyone just buys everything with barters and Bitcoin. No, I'm just saying, let's forget the money here for a second and let's just talk about the hockey. And that's what we're talking about. Let's make it best possible
it's going to be a hell of a tournament.
Tournament.
It might terminate you.
Hopefully my dad's not listening, you know, Mr. Professor Emeritus at U of W. I can't even say tournament properly here.
How do you say tremapoline?
Yeah, exactly. I am so smart, SMRT. But, you know, let's make this entertaining for fans. Let's make this tournament the best it possibly can be for the future and long term, right? Because that's the whole point. I think that the NHL, they're going to look at having this every 4 years, because we've only had two so far, and we've had it kind of had it sporadically. And there was rumors that it might be next year, 2015, but it's going to be probably an occurrence every 4 years.
If you're going to have it in 2015, that means they're not going to the Olympics, because you can't have it 1 year after the Olympics. Well, it has to be every 2 years.
Right.
If they want to do it if they want to do it every 4 years, I think I'm okay with it. I mean, I'm perfectly fine with it every 4 years.
That's what it's going to be now.
And then it in the off years of the Olympics. And the Olympics won't, but I don't think they should go to the Olympics at the same time. I think the NHL should be done with the Olympics.
I don't know why you can't do both.
What's the...
Well, I think South Korea is a... I think in Russia, Russia was a success as far as the way the tournament played out, and Canada won and all that, and there were no issues, but I think...
They have
South
to go
Korea,
to Russia.
South Korea, I think there's a whole issue with the TV and the times the games will be on, and
but like, is that,
all the logistics and everything.
Does that really matter?
I think it does, Rich.
I think it matters to the NHL.
I think the security was a big thing in Russia.
No, I think the bottom line is dollars and cents, and the NHL doesn't make any money off of the Olympics. So why should they shut down, you know, any bounce that I think they were going to get from, you know, the best on best competition at the Olympics?
The players want to play, they'll be there.
Yeah, that's the thing. The NHLPA, there's pressure from the NHLPA.
Do you think the NHL...
Alexander Ovechkin was threatening years ago
that
he was going to go anyways.
That was his home country. That was Russia.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm agreeing with
you.
You mean
all the South Korean players want to go?
Yeah, well, all the South Korean players will want to go too. And then, you know, unfortunately, there aren't any at this point.
It doesn't matter. I mean, Nagano, going to Japan and going to Nagano didn't cause any issues for any of the players. I realize it was the first time and then had that glamour, but at the same time, it didn't matter if anybody was from there or not.
No.
In the National Hockey League. Right. They wanted to be part of the Olympic experience.
I think
we got up at 3 a.m. to watch those games.
Absolutely.
And we didn't complain about it.
No, I agree. But I think the uniqueness and I think the excitement of going to the Olympics has to some degree worn off. And if you can make this World Cup, you know, because the best soccer players in the world don't go play in the Olympics. The Olympic tournament for soccer is, I think, under 23.
It's a fair analogy, Drew. I think it comes down... The conversation... The argument that Richie's making, by the way, I believe is the same argument that Gary Bettman, Bill Daly, the power trust of the NHL is having amongst themselves in the NHLPA and the IIHF, Richie. I think it's open... I think the participation of the NHLers in the Olympics in Pyongyang is completely up in the air. I'd flip a coin. I think there's a chance they go. I think there's a strong chance they don't go.
I don't think they go. Money talks. I mean, look at the TV deal.
Money talks, agreed. And the NHL doesn't make any money on going to
what
the
walks?
Olympics.
Money talks, what walks?
You from the studio if you keep asking questions like that.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to unveil our unrestricted free agent of the week.
Could be of interest to Jets fans, this one.
It could be. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
20 minutes past 11 in the morning here on TSN 1290. Reminder, following us today, Toronto Blue Jays baseball. They look to continue their winning ways. I believe that would be 2-3-1. 7 in a row they go for today against the St. Louis Cardinals, if I'm not mistaken. Tonight, 6 p.m. puck drop. Game 2 between the LA Kings and the New York Rangers.
Busy day on the station.
And, of course, Game 1 tomorrow, 7:30 p.m. puck drop between the St. John's Ice Caps and the Texas Stars. Game 1 of the Calder Cup Final.
I wonder if Keith McCambridge will start getting consideration for jobs around. Because, you know, Willie Desjardins coaching Texas is getting some talk.
Yeah. McCambridge has done a pretty decent job down there.
Couple former Winnipeg/Moose connections on the Stars as well. Derek Meach, who we've had on the show before.
Yeah.
Good Winnipeg boy.
Mm-hmm.
Max Fortinus used to play for the Moose.
Maxime Fortunus, yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Fortunus, I guess. I call him Fortinus.
Yeah.
Great name, by the way.
You also call him Max.
That name has got a gladiatorial...
It does.
Like Maxime
Definitely
Fortunus.
A character from 300 there in that name.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Scott Glennie, of course, is from Winnipeg.
Dallas Stars draft pick.
2009 first-round pick for the Dallas Stars.
Yep.
This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226 or online at LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. com. As we've been doing really since the regular season ended, each week we unveil a different unrestricted free agent of the week, a player who come July 1st will be an unrestricted free agent and available to sign with any team in the NHL. Here is this week's UFA of the week.
Jack Hillen for Radek Martinik, handcuffed by Staal. Now Skinner holding out in front again. Pekkanen scores! Joni Pekkanen!
It's our boy John Forslund right
there. That's right. John Forslund, frequent guest on the show with the call of Joni Pitkinen's overtime winner. The only thing about that overtime winner, I'm not 100% sure what year it's from, but it certainly isn't from any time more recent than about halfway through last year's or 2 years ago's strike-shortened lockout season. Joni Pitkinen did not play a game this past season with a heel injury. Yep. He missed half of the strike-shortened year with that same heel
lockout
injury.
Lockout, not strike, Drew.
Sorry, lockout, not strike. Lockout-shortened season.
Richie's a lawyer. You got to make sure you get your terminology right here. Your parlance. Parlance?
Apologies, Your Honor.
Parlance?
Parlance.
Okay.
Yeah. Pitkinen, 30 years old.
I failed the LSAT, so I don't...
It's just hard to fail something.
It's not impossible.
Yeah. Pitkinen's 30 years old. He's coming off of a three-year, $13.5 million contract. Left-side defenseman. You know, only 30 years old, like I mentioned. Before that, he was on a three-year, $12 million contract. So he's been right in and around that $4 million, $4.5 million salary cap hit. But he's got the injury problems, which have certainly affected him for the last year and a half or so. A very interested UFA come July 1st.
You know, I think this is somebody that the Jets are going to take a look at, Drew, because he fits the criteria of what they need. And they need a top-four defenseman, and they need a guy who can play the left side, you know, with Bogosian, Trouba, and Enstrom. And Pekkanen's biggest asset to me is skating. He's an effortless skater and very good skater for his size. But the concern, as you mentioned, the injury concern is not only an issue because it's injuries in general, and you always wonder, you know, if a guy hasn't played in a year and a half, how will he come back? But it was a heel injury. And, of course, if skating is his biggest asset, does this injury then inhibit his ability to be as good of a skater as he was before, and then his effectiveness is completely and totally, you know, detrimentally affected by this injury? And that's what I'm concerned about, and we don't know because we haven't seen him skate or if he's even able to skate right now and how the rehab is going. So there's certain things you have to look into, and as in any free agent contract, he'll have to pass a physical and the medical reports. And just so people are aware, physicals for different teams, and you know, there's different standards, right? Some teams will know there's an injury and sign him anyway. Some teams, you know, their standards for being in, you know, in tip-top shape injury-wise are different. So if you can add a guy, and I'm sure there'll be interest from other teams, of course. This is a free agency. You're going to pay a premium. But if you can add a guy like this who's even a reasonable facsimile of what he was 2 years ago. He's 30 years old, Drew. He's not old. This could be a real nice addition because he can move the puck as well. You know, not only is he a good skater, but he can move the puck and he can put points up. But he can help your transition game. That's one of the things that the Jets have really lacked, especially, you know, I think Trouba has helped a ton. Enstrom's very good at getting the puck out of his own zone. Bogosian can skate himself out of his own zone. I don't know if he can pass his way out of his own zone enough, but the other three guys, whoever they may be, you know, Mark Stewart, due respect, is not going to be your guy who's going to help you in the transition game. Okay, he's a tough guy, rugged, block shots. You need a guy for sure in your top four playing that 18 to 22 minutes who can do that. He can, Pekkanen can, if healthy, and he can skate his way out of trouble too, and he can play on the power play. He would be an ideal candidate for that spot if he's healthy enough and if he doesn't cost too much.
Yeah, and a few things about Joni Pitkinen, Richie. You mentioned that he's only 30, which is incredible. You think that he's in his late 30s. He's been in the NHL since 2003. When he came in with the Philly Flyers, he was a high draft pick and then went to the Oilers and then Carolina and then in between that...
Fourth overall pick in 2002. Overall pick.
He was a high draft pick, and you know, Richie mentions that there are concerns, and those are serious concerns about his health. You remember he went in feet first into the boards on an icing call, and that's why they were bringing his name up when they were talking about the hybrid icing. There was others too, but his was a scary example of what can happen on a delayed icing, and that was the whole reason. You know, if there wasn't a delayed icing, it would have been an automatic icing and all that. But as far as, you know, the Jets, I think he is a good fit. And, you know, Richie talks about the transition game. When you have defensemen that can move the puck out of your zone, it makes it a lot easier for the forwards, and that is something at the NHL level, which you see players for the LA Kings and the New York Rangers can skate the puck out of their own zone. Mark Stahl and Girardi and McDonough for the Rangers, and then you've got Doughty and Voyanov, these guys for the LA Kings, even Muzzin. It really has a huge impact on your team, and this is an area that we've now talked about for 2 years for the Winnipeg Jets, that there's a hole on the left side in their top four. And Grant Clitson, unfortunately, even though he was given that three-year contract, had the injury problems, he's not going to fill that role. And Mark Stewart, who you guys know I'm a big fan of, got a three-year contract. Was it 3 or 4 years? I think it was maybe 4 years.
It was 4 years.
And I thought he deserved it. But he is a guy they want to have in their bottom six. He can. Bottom two. And he did an admirable job of stepping up and playing in the top four D for the most of the year. But looking forward, he's a guy that also, he's not getting younger, but he's also a guy that has never played that role at the NHL level. Yoni Pekkanen, you remember, was given the three-year contract by the Hurricanes to be their number one defenseman. He's a guy that when and Richie touched on it, and he's right. He's a guy that in motion, he's the ability to go end-to-end in the NHL. And the Jets only have a couple guys that can do that. Bogo and Trouba are the only guys that really have that skating ability. Enstrom too, but he doesn't do it as much. But he can still be, I believe, even though we haven't seen him play in almost a year and a half, which is incredible, I think he can still be, and all reports are that he's going to be healthy and he's going to sign another contract. It's not like nobody said that his career is over by any means. So I think he's someone that, as Richie mentioned, the Jets will look at and a bunch of teams will look at. I mean, you talk about the Islanders. They're obviously clearly looking for a puck-moving defenseman to replace Mark Streit, so they went out and they got Dan Boyle's rights. So I think you're going to have a handful of teams, half a dozen, 10 teams, then are going to look at Pitkin, because it's very rare that these defensemen come up. And at the trade deadline, year after year, we say, oh, they need a number one defenseman. They need a top four defenseman. These guys, again, I sound like a broken record, but these guys just don't come up very often. And he's a guy that it's tough. You know, Richie will give his analysis about how much he could probably fetch on the free agent market. It's kind of tough to say, right? We haven't seen him play for a year and a half.
Worth noting about Pitkinen is there is also a history of concussion problems. He's in addition to the heel injury, which we talked about, he missed 44 games in the 2012 season with a concussion. That, I believe, is his third documented concussion in the course of his career. Obviously, it's just worth putting on the record. We don't know the impact of that, but it is something that teams, I'm sure, will keep in mind when they look at his injury record.
And I can't really project his contract in this case because we don't see the medical records here. I mean, if this guy's damaged goods, he's not going to get more than a year. $1 million for 1 year kind of thing. If he's not damaged goods, then you're probably looking at a 3-year $12 million deal or something like that. So I mean, that's, and you might get some value if he does perform. Another thing is, you know, Pekkanen early in his career, people said, you know, even now, not the best defensively at times, and that's a concern, defensive reads and other things, attentiveness. I put a lot of weight into the fact that a guy like Ken Hitchcock in Philadelphia relied heavily on Yoni Pekkanen when he was there, played him a lot.
Defensive first head coach.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Craig McTavish, a guy who played the situations and protected young players, played Yoni Pekkanen quite a bit in Edmonton as well. So I think I look to those two things and say, okay, coaches who relied heavily on defense and paid it a lot of attention were willing to trust a guy like Yoni Pekkanen. I think that matters.
I agree with you. This is a case where the doctors, first of all, you know, when the teams are negotiating with his agent and they get the medical records, each team's doctors is going to have a different analysis of the situation and his health than another team. Obviously, we're not going to speculate on that because none of us are doctors and we don't know what they're going to be looking for. But this is sort of a very unique player when it comes to unrestricted free agency on July 1st.
It is.
And like you said, you know, if you're a team that you think that he might be damaged goods, you're probably shying away from offering him a contract, or you're offering him 1 year at a very minimal price or something. If you're a team that believes that that his heel is healed up, pardon the pun, or, you know, pardon the comment there, then you might be looking into the 3-year, $12 million range, which is pretty much the contract he was coming off of in Carolina.
6'3", 220 pounds. And can skate if healthy.
He's physical, too.
And can put points on.
Pekkanen can play the physical game as well.
Can put points on the board. I mean, those don't grow on trees.
Yeah. And even though he's 30, he hasn't had any wear and tear in a, outside of the heel injury.
Well, I mean, even he's 30, Drew. His defense when he's 30. I mean, that you could argue that's exactly when he's going to be coming into his own.
Sure. I mean, it's not, and it's not like he's got, and he doesn't have a ton of miles on him. So it's not like this is an old 30-year-old player if his heel is healthy.
I'll be shocked if he doesn't get signed.
Oh, I think he'll get signed. The question becomes one of how many years and how much money.
That's a good
point. That's what I think everything will come down to on July 1st when we see where he's going to end up.
July 5th.
No, it's July 1st.
5th.
1st.
Was it last year that was the 5th?
Yeah. Last year was the 5th because of the lockout. Is it the 1st?
It's the 1st. It's Tuesday,
the 5th
this year. Tuesday, July the 1st this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm mistaken.
That's okay. It was probably not the first time. Probably won't be the last time.
I guess I'm still stuck out in lockout. The lockout drudges. I don't know.
Would you like to go back to that time?
No, I don't want to. I don't want to go back to analyzing the CBA.
Okay. I think we would echo that sentiment. Anyways, let's head to break. When we come back, NHL news and notes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Getting the center of the pass, they get away with it. Mario sets it up, score! Wow! Oh, baby! What a play! First goal, Canada!
We had absolutely no reason to play that clip.
Yeah, we did.
Aside from the fact that I had played the clip of the 1996 World Cup. Earlier.
We want to hear it. First off, it's an opportunity to hear the legend Bob Cole himself, and it's an opportunity to hear a goal that Canada scored when they won, not lost.
Right. Exactly. I wouldn't want my pro-Canada attributes to be put into question here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the program. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. Let's head now to NHL news and notes for this week in the NHL.
NHL news and notes.
NHL news and notes for this Saturday morning. We're going to start with the Winnipeg Jets as they've decided to let 2012 second round draft pick Lucas Sutter re-enter the NHL draft, electing not to sign him to a contract. I believe we have audio from the 2012 NHL draft. Here's Jets GM Kevin Cheveldayoff on Lucas Sutter.
Well, we really like the way he plays. He provides a lot of sandpaper for us, and in the prospect category, he's someone that is very determined to play, and he's someone that when in the interview process and the way he plays, we're real excited that we were able to get him.
How significant of a issue is it for the Winnipeg Jets that they decided not to, this has turned out to be a bust of a draft pick. Let's call a spade a spade. Anytime your second round draft pick, you determine that his development has stalled so significantly that it's not even worth offering a contract to. How significant is it to the organization that that this was a bust of a draft pick?
Hold on, Drew. I don't think I continue. I'm having leg cramps. Hold on.
LeBron James joke. Wow.
That was planned, by the way.
Thanks.
No, Richie, the Lucas Sutter was, of course, of the Sutter lineage and playing with the Saskatoon Blades. He has struggled big time in his development, and he's fallen out of favor with the Jets. There have been some issues with, his off-ice attitude and all that, and his willingness to do what it takes to eventually make it to the NHL one day. But it's unfortunate, Drew, because, when you heard Chevy at the 2012 draft in Pittsburgh, and he had...
Well, play that clip for every player.
Right, but, I mean, he had high hopes at that point, right after he was drafted, but...
The seventh-round pick. Well, we think he's going to... I mean, every team says that about everybody.
Well, I'm just saying that since then, a lot has gone wrong. And that tells you something when... Both the player and the team are not on the same page. He's not on the same page with the Jets as far as what they see for him in the future. And, in that sense, I'm not surprised because as opposed to players like Adam Lowry, who you've seen develop through St. John's, and we've had Robin Short on of the St. John's Telegram to talk about his progression and as well as Keith McCambridge, Lucas Sutter is kind of... does he have a future as an NHLer, I guess, is the question.
Well, you'll see in the draft. I mean, I don't think it goes high at all. I don't think he probably goes at all, to be honest. But it's one pick. I know people are going to try and make more of it. It's a second-round pick who didn't turn out. I don't know what the odds are. I've looked at them before. Your second-round odds aren't great to make sure you get a player. The Jets, if the Jets had not drafted well in other rounds and had other issues, then I'd say, okay, this is a concern. It's not. The Jets have drafted very well. I think anybody looking to go at them for this one is just nitpicking, really. It's soon for him to have already quote-unquote busted, because if he had any potential at all that they thought could play in the NHL, they would have re-signed him, or they would have signed him, excuse me. But I don't think it's anything to worry about. You know, it's a second-round pick that didn't turn out. Now, you could look at it one way and say, well, second-round pick, it didn't turn out, and then you traded the second-round pick so for Setoguchi. So there's a couple there that you're trying to stack your, you know, stock your cupboard up. But I don't think it's a big deal.
It's not a big deal, I'll tell you why it's also not a big deal, because the Jets have a lot of other picks that were not first-round picks that are looking pretty good
exactly
right now.
Right, yeah.
Look at Scott Kosmachuk in the OHL. Look at Connor Hellebuck. There are a lot of players that the Jets have drafted that are looking pretty darn good right now. We mentioned Adam Lowry. So, you know, Brendan Kitchen was drafted this past year. He's playing pretty well in St. John's. He was an overager in the draft.
We don't know if any of those guys. I mean, Lowry, I think, is going to be a guy coming up. I don't know if any of the other guys are going to come up and make a
big impact.
Well,
I'm just saying, Connor Hellebuck, he was the best goalie in college hockey.
Oh,
it means something.
No, it means something. I agree. But, I mean, who knows what it turns into.
Exactly. It doesn't mean he's going to be, you know, the next Patrick Roy, but it means that it kind of, it's a wash with Lucas Sutter doesn't turn out,
but a fourth
another pick
yeah,
does,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So sure. That's the draft.
Yeah, that's the draft. It just goes to show you the randomness and the crapshoot nature of the NHL draft. Moving to Vancouver, where they finally have a general manager in Jim Benning, still don't have a head coach, but Ryan Kesler, you know, Canucks center, has said it doesn't matter who his general manager is, doesn't matter who his head coach is, he wants out.
Why do they want him?
Is he in Philly yet? I mean, he obviously wants to go to the Flyers, right?
Well, it seems as though he would want
to
go.
He's got, like, personal grudges against, like, half the league, though. So, I mean, I don't know. Ryan Kesler.
Is it maybe Boston, Rich? Maybe he'll go to Boston?
Actually, I think he fits really well in Anaheim, that second-line center role.
Yep.
But, you know, what are they giving up? If they're not giving up, if Bonino's untouchable, do they have enough pieces to make that move?
Are they going to move guys like Emerson Edom or Devontae Smith?
Is that enough? I mean, maybe
You're going to have to offer a few players, Richie. Kessler's still a second-line center. He's a first-line center on some teams.
They have the first-round pick, though, from Ottawa. Bobby Ryan.
The Anaheim Ducks do. You're right. So, and it's a high first-round pick. Yeah. I believe it might be number 8. It might be right before the Jets or somewhere in and around there. I'd have to
check. You know, Rich makes a good point. Richie makes a lot of good points on the show. Vancouver's a team that, whether they want to admit it or not, they're rebuilding.
Yeah, make the trade.
They're rebuilding. So why not get a first-round pick, even if it's not a high first-round pick, Rich, and get some young players? I mean, I like a lot of guys on Anaheim. Devontae Smith-Pelly, he looked pretty good in the playoffs.
Anaheim drafts 10th overall, so the Canucks, if they were to look at that 10th overall pick, which was originally Ottawa's pick, the Canucks could get two top 10 picks if that was an option for Ryan Kesler.
Had two first-round picks last year.
Yeah, makes some sense. You get to really rebuild the cupboard a lot quicker there when you have multiple first-round draft picks.
And you want a guy who, A, has a bad attitude as far as I'm concerned, and B, wears down because he plays a really hard style. He's a very good player, don't get me wrong, but that's the kind of guy you want out before too late, because he's going to be a guy who wears down, kind of similar to the way Mike Richards is worn down a bit.
Yeah. I think Richie, as you mentioned, Anaheim and Philly are two teams that are kind of rumored to be the top destinations for Kesler.
He's a pending unrestricted free agent on July 1st, but the New York Islanders acquired the rights to Dan Boyle from the San Jose Sharks for a conditional 2015 fifth-round draft pick. If the Isles are to re-sign Boyle, that becomes a fourth-round selection. Your thoughts on the move by Isles general manager Garth Snow? He did it earlier in the year, earlier in the offseason with Yaroslav Halak, signed Halak to a contract. Dan Boyle, New York Islanders, you think there's a fit there and a possibility?
I believe he has a no trade, so he'd have to actually approve this trade. So at least he's entertaining the possibility of signing in New York. He's from Ottawa. He's played obviously in Tampa before playing in San Jose. You know, they want to replace that Mark Streit offense that they lost, right? Mm-hmm. And they want to get guys who can move the puck. If you saw their bottom four this year, you know, after McDonald and they traded McDonald and Hamonic, I mean, you were looking at Vishnovsky, who had his injury problems. So if you can have and Garcinos come out and said, well, we can have Vishnovsky and Boyle, they'll both play in the first power play unit. You need to have guys who can move the puck. You have a very fast forward group, and if you have a fast forward group and you have a good passing defenseman, I think that can do wonders. They still have more holes, but they need defensemen and goaltenders.
Yep.
Goaltending. They've addressed their goaltending issue. Now they need to address their defensemen. So I have no issue with it at all, really.
Yeah, and there's kind of this belief that it's going to be tough for the Islanders to sign Boyle because of his contract demands. And even though he was injured last year, Rich, he's still a very good offensive defenseman. And you'd have to think he's asking for quite a bit of money, maybe $5 million in that range. He wants to get paid as a top defenseman still. And, you know, Richie mentions Travis Hamonic, who's under contract. And, You've got Calvin DeHaan and Griffin Reinhart, a lot of good young pieces there on defense on Long Island, you know, soon to be the Brooklyn Islanders. So I think it's a very good move because he gives up a fifth rounder to get those rights, and then it becomes a fourth rounder. So if you sign Boyle and you get him for, let's say, a two-year deal, I think that's a good move. And as you mentioned, he did the same thing with Halak, giving up the draft pick. So, you know, he's addressing those needs now and not waiting further into the offseason when there are less and less options, right?
Sure. Might as well. Yeah, he's trying to use every advantage to get a head start on the free agency process.
Well, I mean, he gives you a right side guy, too. And Vishnovsky is going to be a left side guy. It could be a good combination.
In Calgary, Brad Treliving made his first major moves as a general manager there. He hired Craig Conroy and former Hockey Canada executive Brad Pascal as the team's new assistant general managers. They joined Mike Holditch, who has also been an assistant general manager in Calgary since 2010. Conroy, you know, he's had a lot of chatter around him. I believe he was with Los Angeles in the front office role for a little while, if I'm not mistaken. No? Okay,
I'm not sure.
I might be mistaken.
I want to say this, though. Craig Conroy, one of the best guys. I've never met him personally. One of the best guys, best interviews in hockey.
Yeah, great
guy. Just one of the greatest guys in hockey. Everything you hear about Craig Conroy.
And a holdover from the old regime. So I like the fact that they gave him a shot. They
helped him. Love that. Hearing that. Brad Pascal, of course, married to Cassie Campbell.
That's right.
Cassie Campbell Pascal. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to see Brad Treliving solidifying his staff. You know, Brian Burke, I know we're going to talk about this next segment, what he was saying about the Saddle Dome. But, you know, Brian Burke is letting Brad Treliving, you know, get his management team in place. And it's nice because the Calgary Flames are one of the teams that are kind of still at the bottom of that rebuilding process. They got a big draft here coming up, and they're still building their team. You know, is Mike Camilleri going to re-sign? We're not really sure yet, but they've got to build through the draft and build up the AHL system. And it's nice to see the management teams in place, and they're starting the process of building this team up.
Yeah, Conroy wasn't in Los Angeles in the front office.
He played for LA.
Yeah. I don't know where I made up that other fact about, but you know, as per usual, you should listen to me to begin with.
Don't worry, I don't.
Yeah, I know. Your thoughts on the move, Richard?
The hirings, I mean, I think Conroy, well, first off, you compare it to Pittsburgh, you know, you want some veteran hockey people who've played the game before, but I think you have a better structure here.
Yep.
Well, though some would tell you Burke's making the decisions anyways, but you have Treliving, who's had his experience in Phoenix front office, you have Burke, you have Conroy giving input to Treliving, and you have Pascal, who's had the Hockey Canada background and a guy who's, you know, wanting to make the move over to the National Hockey League. It sounds like a pretty accomplished brass, a team that's trying to move it. It sounds like they did it the right way in terms of I like the Treliving hire, and I like that they're, I think Craig Conroy, as you said, is a good guy, but he's also, you know, is respected quite a bit in the market. But not only that, you know, Jay Feaster relied on him. I know that.
Yep.
And
he was director of player personnel, Richie, before, for those who don't know.
Yeah, director of player personnel, exactly, as Ian. And you look at, you know, what he brings to the table, his experience playing in Calgary. I just think it's a good fit. And Pascal, I read a little bit about, I don't know a ton about, but if you're involved with Hockey Canada, you're going to be doing things the right way, and you're going to be somebody who's worked with Bob Nicholson, a good hockey guy, and you've worked with a lot of the best players and a lot of the smart minds. So you've certainly learned a bit along the way. So I think that's a nice. It's a nice diverse group up in the front office of the Calgary Flames.
Very quickly, one last news and notes: New Jersey Devils re-signed defenseman Marek Zidlicky.
Yeah.
1 year, $3 million.
Well, I put that one in there. Zidlicky has struggled big time in New Jersey, and he's put up decent offensive numbers, but nowhere near the offensive numbers they expected out of him. Certainly not what he was putting up.
He's
back,
old now,
back in the day with Nashville Predators, but you know, Zidlicky. It's telling you that they didn't offer him a 2 or 3 year deal. I believe he's 34, 35 years old now. So they offered him 1 year deal, and this might be his last one if he doesn't turn around, because he struggled big time last year. Aside from Andy Green and Bryce Salvador, that defense was a mess last year. You know, Adam Larson's taking a while to develop. So Zidlicky, not surprised that he got a 1 year deal. And, you know, he's got to play better for that team because they expect him. They play him in the top four. So he's got to be better.
I agree, Desi. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's a smaller guy, not great defensively, has seen his better days. You know, obviously Nashville was when he was kind of peaking in terms of his production, but he will move the puck. You need to be able to move the puck from your own zone. New Jersey's defense is weak and kind of just a combination of players. It has been for some time, as even when they made the finals. It's a combination of players that kind of hack together. So weird that that's the group. But,
and the reason why that's so weird is because for so many years they built the defense around Scotty Niedermeyer and Scott Stevens and Danico, and then for a while there they were building it around Paul Martin, and they've really lacked a number one defenseman there. And I think that's something, you know, heading towards the draft in the offseason, that's what they're going to have to address there, because they've got a decent group of forwards. Yager's going to come back.
It's just a weird group. I mean, there's no identity to that team.
Yeah.
Let's hit the break. When we come back, one final segment. It's called Rapid Fire. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment for this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, two shows featuring Lars Kaliu. Two shows, 7:15 p.m. and 10 p.m. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire for this Saturday morning. On Friday, Marty Brodeur told ESPN.com that he plans on testing the free agent market this summer. Quote Brodeur, "I've come to the conclusion that I'm definitely going to be available July 1. I want to play one more season, I want to see what's out there." Brodeur has played 23 seasons in the NHL, all with New Jersey, and is the NHL's all-time leader in games played, wins, and shutouts. If Brodeur decides not to return to New Jersey next year, where is his most likely destination? Ezzy, your basement is not an appropriate answer.
Yeah, it was sad for me. I wrote these questions here, and it's sad for me to think about this. But as we know, last year, guys, before the NHL trade deadline, there were some rumors that Marty Brodeur was, you know, willing to accept a trade, maybe to Chicago. You know, they had Antti Raanta there, you know, to back up Corey Crawford, and then there was the whole thing: does he really want to be a number one goalie and all that? And there's Minnesota Wild was a rumor. I didn't even think that was possible, even though there was the Zach Parise connection. But I'm just thinking. I think Marty Brodeur, I think at this point in his career, would be willing to accept a backup position. And I mean,
they have a choice.
Well, exactly. And I think you think of the options, and maybe it's Chicago. And the obvious one that I think you're going to hear a lot about is Montreal. Everybody remembers his dad was the photographer there. His dad passed away over the last couple of years. And would he back up Carey Price? They've got Dustin Tokarski there, who looks to be the heir apparent to Peter Budaj's spot as the backup. But to me, that's a team that comes to mind. And then you have to start thinking, what other teams right now have an opening, Richie? And there aren't a lot of teams.
Well, backups, yeah. But, I mean, he's not going to come to Winnipeg or anything like that.
No.
He's
going to a team. He's going to a team right now that has a chance at winning the cup. He's not going to a team that
That's going to give him more time to play.
Right, exactly.
Which is going to be a bad team.
Yeah,
good teams aren't going to get him a chance to play.
Right.
You mentioned Montreal. It is interesting if you think that maybe the Habs still think Tokarski needs a full year at the A. They've severed that relationship with Budaj. Well, at least by the decision they made, you know, he might still go back. But the point is,
he's under contract for another year.
Yeah, with that decision, maybe there's a relationship there that can be mended. And then you look at the possibility of 1 year. The problem is how much of a distraction it is.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And as closer to his family retiring as a Hab, I mean, there's certainly significance there. And you know he's not in the same ballpark as Carey Price anymore.
And I think you can, if you're looking at Henrik Lundqvist and Cam Talbot, if Brodeur plays for the Rangers, then that's it.
What about with
If I see Brodeur wearing a Rangers jersey,
what about
that's it.
What about Halak in the Isles? He doesn't have to move, really.
Yeah. It's also another reasonable option there.
I think him staying in the East, Richie makes a good point. I think you're not going to see him go West.
On Thursday, while speaking to a crowd at the Calgary Chamber of Commerce, Flames President of Hockey Operations Brian Burke called the Saddle Dome embarrassing and suggested that the team needs a modern facility which can one day rival the one being built in Edmonton. Did Brian Burke go too far with his comments, or do the Calgary Flames need to start getting serious about building a new arena?
I think he did go too far. First off, there's no plans to build a new arena in Calgary that I'm aware of. And I've been to the Saddle Dome before, a few times actually, and even though it was built in the 80s, it's if you've been there, it's a great old arena.
Yeah,
I love the old arenas. You know what? I'm older, I guess. I'm, you know, and I realize the Islanders are going to move. Nassau County Coliseum on Long Island reminded me of the old Winnipeg Arena. And of course, it's outdated, and now you have to have the revenue streams and all that. But Brian Burke, I don't think, needed to say it was embarrassing. I think that's a bit of a slap in the face.
Well, it's just Brian Burke. That's the way he says. He always goes over the top. But I don't think I agree with you. I don't think the Saddle Dome is embarrassing by any means. I mean, do they need to maybe change it to get? Do they need a new arena to make more money because it's all about making more money? Yeah, probably at the end of the day, to compete with all these new arenas, they need to. But I don't think in the meantime that place is, you know, it's like an old dilapidated.
No, it's not.
Arena.
It's not antiquated. And remember, there was massive flooding there last summer.
Yeah,
and that was a scary thing, and they had to empty it out, clear it out. But I think you, in the meantime, if there's no plans to build an arena, you got to put some money back into it. And
well, that's the choice. It's either right. You refurbish or you just tear it down.
And it was built in the early 80s. And I mean, it's not like it's the Joe Louis Arena, which was built a long time ago. And then so I like the Saddle Dome.
The idea that it also has the saddle, like, that's a cool design.
Yeah. It's great
sight lines. They should maintain that design.
You can walk around and see the ice.
Yeah, they have a small lower bowl and a bigger upper middle bowl. Right.
Earlier this week, designer Mark Avery Kenny released the NHL Simpsons series, which combines NHL team logos with characters from the longest-running American primetime series of all time.
Yep.
The Winnipeg Jets' Simpsonized logo features Otto the bus driver.
Simpsons still on in primetime.
Clutching onto the Jets' symbol. Now that NHL team logos have been Simpsonized, what other television show or movie would you like to see combined with NHL logos?
It's a great question, by the way.
You wrote it.
Yep. So, I mean, I think first off, for the question, you got to think about what TV shows or movies have a lot of characters. The one I like, I'm a big fan of, the one that I thought of, is Breaking Bad. I'd like to see all the characters, and there was a lot of characters over the six years that show was on. I'd like to see the logos kind of incorporating Walter White and Huel and, you know, Saul Goodman, Better Call Saul, all those characters. So that was the one that I thought of would be kind of cool. It's not a cartoon, but it was a long series that has a lot of good characters. So, but I if you haven't checked out those Simpson logos, maybe we'll tweet it out here. They're great.
Cheers and cheers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
No, Drew, you're supposed to. You're the host. You're supposed to be the moderator of the show. Richie can't just skip the question.
Quickly.
He saw it early. You know what? I'm going to cheer Keith McCambridge getting the St. John's Ice Caps to the finals. He's done a great job, former head coach of the Manitoba Moose. And I think, you know, going in the years to come, I think he's going to be someone who's mentioned as a future head coach, definitely assistant coach in the NHL. Go Ice Caps.
Richard.
D-Day yesterday, Drew. Yesterday was D-Day, and I'm going to give my cheer, of course, to all the veterans, World War II veterans, and all the other veterans out there.
Also, you know, thoughts and prayers to Moncton Police and all that.
You're echoing my cheer. I was going to give my cheers and cheer.
You'll be echoing my cheer because
that's
you
right,
said it second.
Yeah, I know. You stole my cheer. But I was going to cheer all the men and women in uniform, police, fire, paramedic, military. Given the tragedy in Moncton earlier this week, the D-Day anniversary, you know, we don't salute them enough in their heroic actions. They're the real heroes. As we run away from trouble.
Yeah. We just eat hero sandwiches. They're the real heroes.
Right. As we run away from trouble, they run towards it to keep us safe, so we're going to send our cheer to all men and women in uniform keeping us safe.
Attaboy, Drew.
That's it for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday morning. Big thank you to our guest, Grant Saunier, general manager of the Charlottetown Islanders of the QMJHL. Big thank you to Mike Colligan from thehockeywriters.com, and a big thank you to Craig Button, TSN's draft expert. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on the website illegalcurve.com. Follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets, NHL, and St. John's Ice Caps news is illegalcurve.com. For producer Tim, who gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is, for my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball, and then later tonight, Game 2 between the Kings and the Rangers.
You've been listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.